So what do you remember from yesterday, where we left off?
And Kamsa had a terrible night before the morning of the wrestling event.
Then Nanda Maharaj went to the arena, which was already set up. Kamsa was there. He presented articles meant for the king. He took his seat in the gallery. It was very, and there were drums playing, and the wrestlers entered. But Krishna and Balaram weren't there. So Kamsa sent some of the cowherd men for Krishna and Balaram. Chakravarti Thakur explained. But according to Vishwanath over here, he's going to say, we'll read quite a bit of his comment today. As soon as he heard the drums were playing and the wrestling match was going to begin, or the wrestling festivities were going to begin, Krishna immediately left Yamuna and went to the arena. So here's after taking their baths and finishing all other morning duties, Krishna and Balaram could hear the beating of the kettle drums in the wrestling arena. They immediately prepared themselves to proceed to the spot to see the fun. When Krishna and Balaram reached the gate of the wrestling arena, they saw a big elephant of the name Kuvalaya Pita being tended by a caretaker riding on its head. So here are the verses on this. Sukadeva Goswami said, O chastiser of enemies, Krishna and Balaram, having executed all necessary purification, then heard the kettle drums resounding at the wrestling arena, and they went there to see what was happening. Here's the comment of Vishwanath. Atta, that's how it begins, Atta Krishnas cha Ramas cha, therefore when Krishna and Rama. That early in the morning, Atta signifies that early in the morning, Krishna and Balaram went, without telling their father and elders, went to the bank of the Yamuna with their friends. So that's what Nanda Maharaj was thinking. This is an apparent disrespect of Kamsa's position. They went to the bank of the Yamuna with their friends. Before washing their faces and hands, they said, O friends, listen to the drums announcing the wrestling match. Let us now leave here and go to the arena. Then everyone quickly went to see the wrestling match. When Lord Krishna reached the entrance to the arena, he saw the elephant Kuvalaya Pita blocking his way at the urging of the keeper. He was instigated because what is the keeper, the trainer of the elephant called? The one who rides on top? It's called the Mahout. And they carry, I can't remember what it's called, but it's a goad for driving the elephant. And kush, shaped like that, because the elephants have such thick skin. So he was pushing the elephant forward. So he was blocking his way. The elephant was blocking Krishna and Balaram's way at the urging of the keeper. Now, this is how Krishna reacted. He securely bound up his clothes and he tied back his curly locks. Lord Krishna addressed the elephant keeper with words as grave as the rumbling of clouds. He said, O driver, move aside at once and let us pass. If you don't, this very day I shall send both you and your elephant to the abode of Yamaraj. So this is the description given of what Krishna did as soon as he saw the elephant dropping his way by Vishnu. Krishna took off his shirt. He tightened his belt and he placed the garlands and other dangling objects that he had around his neck, just dangling, coming loosely from his neck. He placed these over his shoulder. So he took off his shirt, because remember it was quite hot at this time. He took the garlands, he tightened his belt, and he took his garlands and other dangling objects and put it over his shoulder. And he tucked his curly locks under his turban with his fingers, like this, so that they wouldn't fall over his eyes or get in the way of what might happen. He showed he was quite serious. But fearing that they would become loose at the time of combat, Krishna tied back his hair with his upper cloth. So he was getting ready for a fight. Krishna threatened the elephant keeper and the elephant. And the elephant keeper became angry. So Krishna was trying to make him, he and the elephant, we'll see this as the fight goes on. He tried to make the elephant and the elephant keeper more and more angry. In anger, they would fight, and Krishna would frustrate anger at Krishna, and Krishna would frustrate all their attempts to defeat him. So the elephant, the Mahout, he became angry, and he goaded his furious elephant, who appeared equal in time, equal to time, death, and Yamaraj, into attacking Lord Krishna. President of Krishna book said, "You miscreant, caretaker, give way and let me pass through the gate. If you block my way, I shall send you and your elephant to the house of death personified." The caretaker, being insulted by Krishna, became very angry. And in order to challenge Krishna, as was previously planned, they provoked the elephant to attack. So the verse again says, the elephant appeared equal to time, death, and Yamaraj. So time means death, and death means time, or death comes in its time, it must come. So time, death, and Yamaraj, they all have the same implications of death. So the elephant appeared to be like death personified, and he goaded him into attacking Krishna. So Srila Vishnu Prabhupada Thakur's comment as follows. He instigated the elephant to catch Krishna. The elephant is described as like being Yamaraj, who brings an end to one's life through the force of time. However, Krishna is the master of time, which is stronger than the elephant. Thus the elephant and his trainer could do no harm to Krishna. Thus, by using the phrase kalantaka yamopamam, comparable to time, death, and Yamaraj, Sukadeva was comforting fearful Parikit. That's quite a comfort, isn't it? Telling about the elephant standing in front of Krishna was equal to time, death, and Yamaraj. But because Krishna, again, is the master of these things, there is nothing for Maharaj Parikit to be fearful about Krishna's welfare. Allowed. He couldn't seem fearful, so he was being comforted. So the Lord of the Elephants charged Krishna. And the first thing he did, what? With his trunk. Because the trunk is like a muscle. And the elephant has very weak eyes. But he has a very strong sense of smell with his trunk. So he charged Krishna, and he grabbed Krishna with his trunk. He seized him with his trunk, but Krishna slipped away and then struck him with a blow and disappeared from his view amongst his legs. So there's a so this is how the Mahout responded to Krishna's challenge. He was blocking the way, so Krishna wasn't intimidated, and he dressed himself appropriately for the fight and said, if you don't move, I'm going to kill both of you. And he was in a very serious mood. So the elephant keeper responded by goading the elephant further, and the elephant grabbed Krishna, and Krishna released himself. So, and then he ran under the legs, or under the body of the elephant by the legs. So the first attack of the elephant is with the trunk. What, you know what they do? Do they have elephants in Slovenia?
In the zoo.
Only in the zoo. No tigers either.
Only in the zoo.
But what the elephant does, he grabs you, and he doesn't try to squeeze you, but throws you down and then steps on you. That's how elephants fight. Like that, in great anger, they lift you up in the air, dash you to the ground, and step on you. So this was his first means of attack. Quite a wonderful sequence of what happened. He tried to catch him with his trunk, but Krishna very dexterously moved behind the elephant. Being able to see only the end of his trunk, the elephant could not see Krishna hiding behind its legs. So that's moving a little forward. So we'll read Vishwanath's comment on this. Using its trunk, the elephant seized the waist of Krishna. So he thought, oh, we'll see who is sending who to Yamaraj. So he actually had captured Krishna, who was standing there fearlessly. So Krishna was standing there. Go ahead, practically speaking. So the elephant came ahead and grabbed him. And then Krishna struck the elephant on his trunk with his left fist. And the elephant lost control from that punch. And Krishna slipped out from his grasp and disappeared between his four legs, which were as big as pillars. So then, Vishwanath explains, first Krishna hid behind one leg. And when the elephant used the sense of smell, so he put his trunk back there to find out where Krishna was, because he's huge. And his body is so huge, he can't, and his eyesight is weak as well, so he couldn't understand where Krishna was by seeing him or by hearing him, so he used the sense of smell. So he kept on putting his trunk to find out where Krishna was. And Krishna would hide behind one leg and then the next leg. In this way, playfully, Krishna cheated the elephant in many ways, and he showed the public his remarkable daring. Because when Krishna does things, everyone sees how wonderful he does them. So he went underneath the body of the elephant, and the elephant put his trunk, and he hid behind one leg. And when the elephant put his trunk over to that leg, he just went around to another leg, and he just hid, and the elephant couldn't figure out where he was. So daring, because elephants are huge, in case you didn't notice. Infuriated at being unable to see Lord Keshava, the elephant sought him out with his sense of smell. Once again, Kuvalaya Pita seized the Lord with the end. So he caught him again. Aha! You got away last time, but now you cannot escape. So he seized the Lord with the end of his trunk, only to have the Lord forcefully free himself. So that's something the elephant was not at all used to, because he's so powerful. The comment of Śrīla Viṣṇu Chakravarti Thakura. Not being able to see Krishna, the elephant detected him with a sense of smell and seized Krishna with his trunk once again. With the desire to display his feats to the public and to encourage the beast to keep fighting, Krishna allowed himself to be seized by the elephant's trunk. When the elephant thought he was successful, Krishna forcefully freed himself, saying, "So you want to show your strength?" Then, Lord Krishna, so he was underneath the legs of the elephant at this time. So he had gone there and he freed himself twice, and the elephant was bewildered. So Krishna went behind the elephant then, and he grabbed the powerful Kuvalayapita by the tail and playfully dragged him 25 bow lengths as easily as Garuda might drag a snake. And a bow length is? Maybe 2 meters, I think, if I remember. I'm not 100% sure. So he began to pull him, the huge elephant, by the tail. So when you're pulling such a huge elephant by his tail, that's my So he pulled him by his tail. So when you pull something huge by something fine like that, like it's someone like pulling you by your sikha or something like that, or by your hair and forcibly pulling you. And how much pain? Something huge pulled by something very thin. So that was very painful for him. So Krishna was beginning to give him hints of how powerful he was. Krishna dragged the elephant 25 bow lengths, 125 feet, so it's approximately 5 foot per bow length, or 100 hand widths distance by his tail. So not just for a few feet, but a long distance. And the elephant could not stop him. You can imagine the elephant was an elephant being pulled by his tail. As Lord Achyuta held on to the elephant's tail, the animal tried to twist away to the left and to the right, making the Lord swerve in the opposite direction. So he would pull this way and Krishna would go that way. Because he's trying to escape. Just as a young boy would swerve when pulling a calf by the tail. In order to encourage the elephant to fight, Krishna slightly slackened the force of his pulling. And when the elephant regained strength, he would turn to the left in order to catch Krishna, who was holding his tail. And Krishna would then move to the right. And when the elephant would turn to the right, then Krishna would go to the left, just as a strong boy is moved about while clutching the tail of a calf. Krishna then came to face with the elephant. So he was chasing Krishna. After he let him go, he was so angry. He came running at Krishna. And Krishna, he came face to face with Krishna. And Krishna slapped him in the face. So a slap is adding insult to injury. And then ran away. And Kuvalayapita, so angry, pursued the Lord. And he managed to touch him again and again with each step. But Krishna outmaneuvered the elephant and made him trip and fall. So here's Vishnu's description of this. In order to play in different ways, Krishna let go of the elephant's tail. Krishna then struck the elephant lightly with his hand. If Krishna had given him a proper blow, it would have killed him immediately and ended the game. And after striking the elephant, Krishna quickly ran away without any effort, but then reduced his speed to encourage the elephant. When the elephant began to touch him, Krishna stumbled as if tired of running. And then he went underneath his legs and the elephant tripped over him and fell to the ground. As Krishna dodged about, he playfully fell on the ground and quickly got up again. So Krishna fell on the ground, he tripped the elephant, but then Krishna got up. But the elephant couldn't see where Krishna was. So he thought Krishna is right underneath on the ground. So the raging elephant, thinking Krishna was down, tried to gore him with his tusks. But instead he struck the earth. purport. Comment. To make the elephant forcibly strike the hard stone on the ground, Krishna pretended to fall on the ground and slowly rise up. And seeing Krishna on the ground, the elephant became determined to kill him. The elephant fell on his knees and dug the earth with his tusks. At the very fraction of a moment the elephant was hurling his tusks, Krishna got up and ran to another spot. 12. The elephant's prowess foiled. The Lord the elephant, Kuvalayapita, went into a frenzied rage out of frustration. But the elephant's keepers, goaded him on, and he furiously charged Krishna once again. The Supreme Lord, killer of the demon Madhu, confronted the elephant as he attacked. Seizing his trunk with one hand, Krishna threw him on the ground. Noticing that time was passing, Krishna concluded his sporting with Kuvalayapita. So Krishna nonchalantly caught the elephant's trunk with his left hand. Then Lord Hari climbed onto the elephant with the ease of a mighty lion. He pulled out a tusk, and with the tusk he killed the elephant and the keeper. Mm-hmm. And leaving the dead elephant aside, Lord Krishna held on to the tusk, and Balaram took the other tusk as well. That was, of course, the elephant had them, but tusks are so valuable. So here's the scene. They were blocking the gate to the wrestling arena, and Krishna killed him in such a wonderful way. And then he pulled out the tusk, and Balaram pulled out the tusk, and he took the tusk, and the elephant was huge. His legs were as big as pillars, and his tusk was also huge. And with the tusk upon his shoulder, he entered the wrestling arena. Drops of the elephant's blood and sweat were sprinkled all over him. And his lotus face was covered with fine drops of his own perspiration. And thus the Lord shone with great beauty. With the elephant's tusk perched on his shoulder, Amsa Nyasta Vishano, and with fine particles of perspiration like drops of dew on his lotus face, and the drops of blood and itra from the elephant, Krishna's body glistened with beauty and appeared as the epitome of Viraras, or chivalry, or heroism. My dear King, Lord Baladev and Lord Janardhan, each carrying one of the elephant's tusks as his chosen weapon, entered the arena with several cowherd boys. Well, here's a very important verse that's quoted very often. Malanam masiniyanvinam naravaras trinam smaro muttimam gopinam sadhano satam chiti bhujam shasta sapitri shishu mityu bhojapati varad avidusam tatvad param yoginam vrishinam paradevat eti vidito rangam gata sagrajaha. The various groups of people in the arena regarded Krishna in different ways when he entered it with his elder brother. The wrestlers saw Krishna as a lightning bolt. The men of Mathura as the best of males, the women as Cupid in person, the coward men as their relative, the impious rulers as their chastiser. His parents saw him as their child, the king of the Bhojas, as death, the unintelligent as the Supreme Lord's universal form, the yogis as the absolute truth, and the Vrishnis as their supreme worshipable deity. So this verse showing that, proving the Upanishadic verse that Krishna is the reservoir of all rasa. Let's see what Prabhupada says up to, set up to this point. Just here, we'll go through again how he describes the killing of Kulayapita, and then we'll just talk about Krishna's dramatic entry. Being able to see to only the end of his trunk, the elephant could not see Krishna hiding behind its legs. He tried to capture him with its trunk. Krishna then very quickly escaped capture, and he again ran behind the elephant and caught its tail. Holding the elephant by its tail, Krishna began to pull it, and with very great strength he dragged it for at least 25 yards, just as Garuda drags an insignificant snake. Krishna pulled the elephant from this side to that, from right to left, just as he used to pull a calf by its tail in his childhood. After this, Krishna went in front of the elephant and gave it a strong slap. He then slipped away from the elephant's view and ran to its back. Then, falling down on the ground, Krishna placed himself in front of the elephant's two legs and caused it to trip and fall. Krishna immediately got up, but the elephant, thinking that he was still lying down, tried to push an ivory tusk through the body of Krishna by forcibly stabbing it into the ground. Although the elephant was harassed and angry, the caretaker, riding on its head, tried to provoke it further. The elephant then rushed madly towards Krishna, and as soon as it came within reach, Krishna caught hold of the trunk and pulled the elephant down. And when the elephant and caretaker fell, Krishna jumped on the elephant, broke off one of its tusks, and with it killed the elephant and the caretaker also. And after killing the elephant, Krishna took the ivory tusk on his shoulder, decorated with drops of perspiration and sprinkled with the blood of the elephant. He looked very beautiful, and thus he proceeded towards the wrestling arena. But Balaram took the other tusk of the elephant on his shoulders, and accompanied by their cowherd boyfriends, they entered the arena. So Kamsa had planned that elephant, he had placed that elephant specifically there and had the mahout goad him and anger the elephant, so he would be so angry he would kill Krishna and Balaram and wouldn't let him pass. So Krishna killed the elephant. So Kamsa's there and he's hearing something outside, and then he sees beautiful Krishna and Balaram and some coward boys walk in the arena with all the drums playing. And this is the first time he's actually seen Krishna decorated in this way with the weapons of the tusk. What does that mean when they're carrying the tusk of the elephant? It means that the elephant has been killed. And there was a fight. Krishna was decorated with both perspiration and the blood of the elephant, and his hair was tied back with his upper cloth, his shirt was off, and his garlands, etc. Maybe Krishna didn't have them with him exactly, because he had to do a lot of falling on the ground and fighting. And there Krishna and Balaram walked in, showing no fear, having entered the kingdom of Kamsa. Kamsa knew that Krishna was his death, and he was terrified. And then, so the first thing that's described when Krishna walks in is how he was viewed. So Kamsa viewed him as death. But everyone else didn't view him exactly in that way. And Krishna has all these things. He's the reservoir of all rasa. When Krishna entered the wrestling arena with Balaram and their friends, he appeared differently to different people, according to their different relationship rasa with him, according to their consciousness. they saw one thing or another. Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure and the reservoir of all kinds of rasa, both favorable and unfavorable. He appeared to the wrestlers exactly like a thunderbolt. To the people in general, he appeared as the most beautiful personality. To the females, he appeared to be the most attractive male, Cupid personified, and thus he increased their lust. The cowherd men who were present there looked upon Krishna as their own kinsman, coming from the same village of Vrindavan. The impious Kshatriya kings who were present saw him as the strongest ruler and as their chastiser. To the parents of Krishna, Nanda and Yashoda, he appeared to be the most loving child. To Kamsa, the king of the Bhoja dynasty, he appeared to be death personified. To the unintelligent, he appeared to be an incapable person in personality. To the yogis present, he appeared to be the supersoul. And to the members of the Vishnu dynasty, he appeared to be the most celebrated descendant. Thus appreciated differently by the different kinds of men present, Krishna entered the wrestling arena with Balaram and his cowherd boyfriends. Having heard that Krishna had already killed the elephant, Kuvalayapita, Kamsa knew beyond a doubt that Krishna was formidable. He thus became very much afraid of him. Krishna and Balaram had long arms. They were beautifully dressed, and they were attractive to all the people assembled there. They were dressed as if they were going to act on a dramatic stage, and they drew the attention of all the people. So where did they get these fine, wonderful clothes from? Colorful clothes. He got them. They were Kamsa's own clothes. And he got them from the washerman. But dressed to attract attention. So there's a long purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur here. Yes. We read some of that. When Kamsa saw that Kuvalayapita was dead and that the two brothers were invincible, he was overwhelmed with anxiety. Before, he was disturbed by anxiety, Vishwanath said, but now he was overtaken by that anxiety, even though Kamsa was a great hero. So everyone just was staring at Krishna and Balaram. So here's the purport explaining how Krishna, one detail by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. This verse shows that Krishna is the personified essential purport of all the Upanishads. Krishna, who was declared in the Shrutis to be the great original form of all rasas, Maharasa Sarupa, he manifested himself within the wrestling arena to the different types of people present in accordance with their particular mentalities. In front of wrestlers like Chanura, who had bodies as big as mountains, Krishna was like a thunderbolt. Krishna has tender, cool, and gentle limbs. He appeared to the envious wrestlers to be extremely hard like a mountain with harsh, pain-inflicting limbs. Though sugar candy is sweet, it tastes bitter to one with jaundice. Though Krishna's form was seen by the wrestlers and other similarly inclined spectators, they did not taste his real form, Rasa Sarupa, the real form of the Lord, but rather they experienced Rasa Bhas in their hearts. For the men of Mathura, who were non-envious from their very birth and endowed with a generalized mood of pure love, in other words, no specific rasa, Krishna appeared as the best of men, possessing the most excellent qualities and performing the most amazing and extraordinary pastimes. Because the minds of these men were situated in pure goodness, they appreciated Krishna's true identity as the best of males, and thus they relished the mellow of Vismaya Rasa, or the mellow of astonishment. The young women of Mathura, who were without any trace of material lust and who were full of prema, appreciated Krishna's true identity as the original Cupid. Therefore, within their hearts, Krishna manifested the mood of conjugal affection, Ujjala Rasa. By the use of the word Murtiman, incarnation or embodiment, as a modifying adjective for smara, it indicates that all other realizations or limbs or expansions of this particular sarup of Krishna's form, the transcendental Cupid of Kamadeva. The coward boys appreciated Krishna's true identity, his sarup, as their intimate friend. Thus amongst them he manifested the mood of friendship, Sakyaras, and the mellow of humor, Hasyaras. The impious kings who were burdening the earth and offending the Lord's devotees saw Krishna as their destroyer. But since being the destroyer is not the sarup of Krishna, who is the well-wisher of all and the reservoir of unlimited pleasure, persons like the restless could not appreciate Krishna's true identity. Amongst them, Krishna manifested rasa-vasa in the mood of anger, rodra-rasa. For his parents, Nand and Vasudev, or else Vasudev and Devaki, Krishna appeared as a baby, indicating that they appreciated his sarup, since being the son of Nanda and Vasudeva, both his two identity. Thus they experienced the mood of parental love, Vatsalya Ras, and also the mood of compassion, Karuna Ras, because they also saw there were persons present who wanted to hurt Krishna. Kamsa, the king of the Bhojas, saw Krishna's death. Krishna was a stream of sweet, intoxicating nectar that does not have a sarup of death. Thus Kamsa did not really taste Krishna, but got a dim reflection of transcendental taste, Abhas, in the mood of fright, Bhayanaka. To Kamsa's ignorant priests and other offenders, Krishna appeared like an ordinary mundane person. Such bewildered persons said, "Just see, what sort of supreme lord is this that steals others' wives and slaughters cows and other innocent creatures?" When did Krishna slaughter an innocent creature and a crab and a cow or a cow? Or is this somewhere? Yeah. And innocent creatures? Poor ducks like Bakasura, poor innocent. They'll kill so many. And he did kill poor innocent Trinavart and Putana. Indeed, even now his limbs are contaminated with the bones and blood of some ordinary living being, which is wicked even for ordinary men. Thus Krishna is most repulsive to look at. Since such extremely sinful blasphemers, who were unintelligent and more fallen than demons like Kamsa, had no attraction for Krishna, their mood was a rasa-vasa, or of ghastliness, vibhatsa-vats of rasa. Because Krishna wasn't, because there was no star above. So it's considered an abhas of rasa. But it's a shadow. For the yogis, such as Sanaka, Krishna was the supreme truth in person, the Param Brahma, which means that they did not appreciate Krishna's true identity. And then Krishna manifested the mellow of Shantaras, neutrality. The members of the Vishnu dynasty saw Krishna as their most worshipable Supreme Lord. They tested his sarup as the mood of servitude, Dasyaras. So amongst the 10 types of people described in the arena, 4 being inimical to Krishna were unable to appreciate the transcendental moods of relationship with him, and thus could not taste the real rasa of Krishna, who is the source of all rasa. The other 6 classes of persons relished 8 rasas. The Upanishads say, Raso Vaisa Rasa Hi Ayam Labva Anadi Bhavati. The Supreme Lord is the very form of rasa. Having tasted that rasa, or most astonishing bliss, the living entity becomes completely blissful. That's the meaning of that Vaisa verse. The Supreme Lord is the very form of rasa. Having tasted that rasa, or most astonishing bliss, the living entity becomes completely blissful. In other words, when one associates with Krishna. But the mere proximity to Krishna isn't actual association, because they didn't actually experience Krishna at all. They experienced Abbas. So that's part of the point here. Among the 10 types of people described, it is confirmed here in the 10th canto's description of Kamsa's wrestling master, Krishna, is that rasa that everyone is tasting according to who they are and what their relationship with the Absolute Truth is. The above statement on rasa from the Upanishads means that although a person may be blissful if he attains Krishna, tablabdham, who is rasa personified, he then becomes completely full of bliss. Ananda bhavati. Labdha anandi bhavati. I hope his life probably certainly. So vaisa rasa hi ayam labdha anandi bhavati. And when Kamsa saw that Kuvalaya Pitu was dead and the two brothers were invincible, he was overwhelmed with anxiety. Haripad called, by the way, and said that he was invited to that program, so he was going to go there, and he wanted to let you know that. Because he probably had told you he was coming tonight with him. Being a gentleman. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
One might ask, when Krishna entered the arena, is it that the various individuals see Krishna according to their consciousness? Or is it that he manifests differently?
He manifests differently according to their consciousness.
Yeah.
That's because Krishna has unlimited features. So he has all those features.
Yeah.
He's external. External means without a direct relationship with him.
Mm.
So all the ones who had negative didn't really have a direct relationship with him. They had a relationship with his shadow, so to speak, or his or Maya. So they couldn't see him. So their consciousness causes them. That's the nature of the Absolute Truth. According to how one approaches the Absolute Truth.
Yeah.
Brahmeti Paramanati Bhagavaneti Savite Vananti Tatva Vigya Tatvamya Abjayam. So there is one Absolute Truth, and according to one's method of approach, one will perceive that Absolute Truth in different ways. So those three that I mentioned, they have to do with transcendentalists. But it's always true, yayatamamba padente, according to how we approach Krishna, we perceive them differently. But your question was more, is it our, the poor perceiving through our consciousness, or he's manifesting?
Yeah.
So. It's both.
Yeah.
Because that's what it seems. Just like it's. If you have red sunglasses on and you perceive the white light
as red?
Mm.
Is it because of the filter of your eyes or because of the light?
Right.
Yeah, it's got to be. Because that filter allows you to see part of the spectrum only.
Yeah.
And the universal form in the material world is like the whole spectrum of Krishna's manifestation.
I guess one can also say that one doesn't perceive anything without the supplication of Super Swami.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's the point. Perception is by the grace of the Super Soul. Mm. And he's the ultimate object of perception. Because even the external energy that clouds one's vision, and also the external energy is the object of vision too.
Mm, yeah, that's right. That's right.
And then there's your consciousness. Matta smittam jnanam aparam cha. So that's also dependent on him, so at every step appears that we're fully dependent on him.
Mm.
And there's that verse in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam that says that even the atheists who argue a philosophy, an atheistical philosophy, are given that philosophy by Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And the arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Because their vision is like that. So Krishna provides them with the intellectual justification for what they're already seeing by virtue of their consciousness.
Yeah. Receive reinforcement according to the desire.
That's the general principle. And even if Krishna stood right in front of them and said, "Here I am," as he did in front of Kamsa, they couldn't see him.
No.
Because their vision is tinged by the envy of their consciousness.
Mm.
Because we always see by our consciousness.
Then you could say that when someone enters our temple, sees the deity on the altar as a stone figure, a decorated stone figure, they're seeing an avas of the person there.
Seeing. Yes.
A shadow.
Chai, you know, this, or what, an emanation of him, the same stone that comes from him.
Mm.
And then all our different levels of advancement how we perceive Krishna when we see him in the form of his deity is also, there's so many different gradations. Mm. And that's also him.
Yeah.
And who sees Krishna fully?
Primarily nurtured.
Yeah, but we could say no one. Also. It's not that the gopis see him fully, or the residents of Vrindavan, they only see him in one way. They don't see his universal form,
right.
They don't see that.
Right.
No one can see everything, and no one should see everything. No one can, because he's reality, he is the only one who knows reality.
So then the only way to know about him would be from him, right? Because nobody else...
Love him. Well, those who know him.
You know, no one else can give you a full picture.
No one can give you the full picture anyway.
Yeah.
We can't hold the full picture.
Can't perceive it.
But it's just it's too vast. Yeah. But no one wants, if you want to see the full picture, then you have to become him. So instead we should just develop our relationship with him. That's the idea. No one else knows reality.
Yeah.
We're either covered by one Maya or another Maya.
Yeah.
We need, especially the living entities, need shelter. That's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. No one knows me as I am. Even the great sages.
Sometimes things when we're in such ignorance, that I listen to myself, it would be sort of like a help to me to surrender. It is a sort of mental state. If I knew him better, just like say I know a person and I like them, and then you know it's easy to do whatever is necessary to please them, say. But actually, it's kind of like that's not our approach. Because that's just an ignorant, the thoughts of a person in ignorance. But a person who's enlightened, like the gopis, they don't want to know him better. Like, know him better means, did he really do this, and is he capable of doing that?
Well, but our process of knowing him better is the hearing process, and associating with him through hearing and chanting and remembering and serving. That's our process of knowing him better, because then he reciprocates. So the conditioned souls will tend to think. So Krishna's system is, you take a step to me, and then I will take so many to you. But we'll tend to think he should take the first part.
Because then I'll be able to take my part.
Yeah, but
he's the strong one, but the weak one, he should do.
But the reality is, he does.
Yeah.
You go first. No, you go first. No, you go first. But the reality is, he goes first, because he comes to us in the form of the holy name and the devotees and transcendental literatures. He's trying to come to us,
yeah.
But we're turning our backs on him, yeah. And saying, "Why aren't you coming to me?
Why can't I, whatever?"
No. It's more what I'm saying, that we turn our backs on him,
yeah.
And he's coming to us, and we're saying, "Why don't you come to me?"
Okay.
Or we're closing our eyes and saying, "Why don't you show me yourself?"
Reveal yourself to me.
But he is.
Yeah.
In the form of the holy names, in the form of the deities. And that was the focus, in one sense, of the one of the classes they gave in Melbourne. On Java, is just face him.
Mm.
If you remember that, our job is just to try to be in his presence.
Mm. Yes, that's all you have to do, is just be there with him. Well, that brings me to my second question. This Kubalaya Pita, you know, you were describing how he was picking him up. He rode on his hip. He rode on his back. You know, he got him in his trunk. He had so much, he got pulled by him, he had some association with him. But it didn't, it just produced more and more rage. He had so much, he actually touched him, he actually rode on him. So he was in contact with him, so directly.
But the point being that one has to be in contact by consciousness, not by physical proximity. Kamsa saw him. By consciousness, one has to be in contact with him. What is the right consciousness to contact him? Is that physical proximity? Or some kind of a proximity of consciousness, even that your consciousness is near his consciousness, because of, yeah. So what is the consciousness that brings us in the proximity of him, that causes him to reveal more of himself to us? That's Krishna consciousness.
State of mind, isn't it?
State of consciousness, you say. Okay.
And then the other question is,
what's
the
between its 8:15?
What is the process to evoke that?
Oh, you know that. That's all we're supposed to be doing. Sambandhavi Dayada and Prayojan. Okay.